pull up a chair. I want you to picture something with me. It's March 14, 1915. San Francisco, the Panama Pacific International Exposition is roaring along the waterfront, a whole white city of plaster palaces and searchlights built to tell the world that San Francisco had come back from the earthquake. 50,000 people are packed along the marina. They've paid their quarter at the gate, they've eaten their sausages, they've seen the Liberty Bell on display, and now they are all looking up. Every face, every one of them tilted toward the sky, because the man they came to see is up there, and his name is Lincoln Beachy. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger. And today on the Hangar we are going to talk about the first real airshow superstar. The man they called the Master Birdman, the fellow Orville Wright, Orville himself, called the greatest aviator of them all. Most of you listening have never heard his name, and that is a crime I intend to fix in the next 15 minutes or so. Before we get too far down the runway, a quick word about today's sponsor. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, tailwheel endorsement, all the way up through your type ratings. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And if you know anything about me, you know I'm a sucker for a good story you can hold in your hand. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, back to 1915. Now to understand Lincoln Beachy, you have to understand what aviation looked like in 1915. The Wright brothers had flown at Kitty Hawk only 12 years earlier. 12 years. That's the distance between a kid starting primary school and that same kid graduating high school. That's how fresh this whole thing was. Airplanes in 1915 were, to be polite about it, murder machines, wood and fabric and piano wire, rotary engines that dumped castor oil all over the pilot's face. No brakes, no parachutes, no radios, no nothing. You climbed in, you held on, and you hoped. And yet, in this window between the Wrights and the First World War really kicking off, there was this strange golden moment. A traveling circus of airshow pilots who went town to town across America, thrilling crowds that had never seen an airplane with their own eyes. They called them the early birds, and Lincoln Beachy was the king of all of them. Beachy was a little fellow, 5'6", maybe 130 pounds soaking wet. Born in San Francisco in 1887. He started in dirigibles, actually, little gas bags with lawnmower engines strapped underneath. He was piloting airships at the St. Louis World's Fair when he was 17 years old. 17. Think about what you were doing at 17. But airships were slow, and Beachy had a need for speed that outran anything a gas bag could give him. So when Glenn Curtiss started building airplanes, Beachy hitched his wagon to that team. He joined the Curtiss Exhibition Company, and he started flying the hottest, twitchiest, most unforgiving machines of the era. Now here's where it gets interesting. Everybody else flying airshows in those days had a routine. They'd take off, they'd go up, they'd fly a big lazy circle around the field, they'd come back down, maybe a little dip for the crowd, the rubes would clap. Everybody goes home. Beachy looked at that and said, "That is not an airshow, that is a parade." He started doing things nobody had ever done with an airplane. The dip of death, he called one of them. He'd climb to 3,500 feet, chop the engine and push the nose straight down, vertical, and he'd ride that thing all the way to the deck. Engine off, pulling up at the last possible second and skimming the grass. The crowds had literally never seen anyone willingly point an airplane at the ground. They thought he was crashing. Women fainted, men dropped their straw boaters, and Beachy would pull up, waggle his wings, and grin. Then he taught himself to fly upside down, not with a fancy inverted fuel system. These engines did not do inverted. He would roll over at the top of a loop and glide upside down with the engine sputtering and dying, living off of whatever energy he had, and roll back right side up before he ran out of altitude. He was doing energy management aerobatics before anybody had the words for it. He did the first loop-the-loop ever flown in America. That was 1913 over Hammondsport, New York. Some say a Frenchman named Pigou did it, first a few weeks earlier in Europe. Beachy and Pigou argued about it for the rest of their short lives. But in America, Beachy was the first, and he did it over and over, right in front of paying crowds. He flew down Market Street in San Francisco below the rooftops. He flew through the Niagara Falls Gorge, dropping below the lip of the falls, with the spray coming up around his wings. He raced a locomotive across a field in Columbus, Ohio, and beat it. He raced race car drivers. He raced Barney Oldfield, the greatest race car driver of the day, and the two of them would put on a show together. Airplane versus automobile. Dust and castor oil everywhere. He was, according to the newspapers of the day, the single most photographed man in America. Think about that for a minute. In 1914, more photographs were taken of Lincoln Beachy than of Teddy Roosevelt. More than of Woodrow Wilson, more than of any movie star, because there weren't really any movie stars yet. This tiny little aeronaut. This kid from San Francisco was the most famous face in the country, and he was famous because he was brave enough and crazy enough to do things with a Curtiss pusher that nobody else on earth would try. Here is the number that always stops me cold. By the end of 1914, something like 17 million Americans had seen Lincoln Beachy fly in person. 17 million, out of a country of 99 million, one in every six Americans had stood on a fairground or a racetrack or a beach and watched this man turn his airplane upside down. That is a level of fame we can barely imagine today. But here's the dark side of all that. The reason Beachy was famous was because he was doing things other pilots could not do. And when other pilots tried to copy him, they died. A lot of them died. By 1913, the newspapers had started tallying up the Beachy imitators who had gone in trying to loop or dive or stunt like him. Some counts had it at 17 dead, some had it higher. Beachy took that hard. He actually quit flying for a stretch in 1913. Stood up in front of a crowd and announced he was done, that he was washing his hands of it, that he could not keep killing young men with his example. He meant it too, but he couldn't stay away. Flying was in him the way it gets in some of us. He came back, he went to work with a new designer named Warren Eaton, and together they built him a machine that was different from everything he had flown before, a monoplane, a tractor monoplane, meaning the propeller was out front, the way God intended, not behind him pushing like a Curtiss. He called it the Little Looper. Some sources call it the Beachy Eaton Special, a clean-lined, beautiful little airplane with an 80-horsepower gnome rotary up front. And he took it to San Francisco for the big show, the Panama Pacific International Exposition of 1915. Now the exposition was a big deal. I cannot overstate this. San Francisco had been flattened in the 1906 earthquake, and this fair was the city's way of announcing to the world that it was back. They built 600 acres of temporary buildings along the marina, pavilions from every nation on Earth, the Tower of Jewels with over 100,000 cut glass pieces glittering in the searchlights. Something like 19 million people came through the gates over the course of that year. And the headline act, the man on every poster, was Beachy. He flew there all through the winter of 1915. He was doing 3-4 shows a week. The exposition paid him $1,000 a day, which in 1915 money is roughly $30,000 a day in today's cash. He was the highest paid airshow pilot in the world, and he was earning every penny of it over the chilled waters of San Francisco Bay. March 14th was a Sunday. The weather was what San Francisco weather does in March. Clear in patches, hazy over the water, a little breeze off the Pacific. About 50,000 spectators were crammed along the marina seawall and up the slopes of the exposition grounds. Beachy was scheduled for an afternoon show, and he was going to debut a brand new routine in the Little Looper. He took off around 3 in the afternoon, climbed out over the bay, out past Fort Mason, banked back toward the crowd. The people on the ground could hear that gnome rotary buzzing away. You know the sound of a gnome? High-pitched? Almost a whine, shedding oil in a fine mist behind it. A smell like hot metal and burnt castor that you could catch from the ground if the wind was right. He climbed to about 3,000 feet. Then he did what he had done 1,000 times before. He rolled the Little Looper onto its back, pulled the nose down into a vertical dive, and started the pullout for a routine. He called the figure eight in the clouds, and the wings came off. The witnesses on the ground said it sounded like a gunshot, a sharp crack, and then the wings just folded up. Both of them, up and back like somebody closing a book. The fuselage, with Beachy still strapped into it, kept going in a straight line, straight down, into the bay about 300 yards off the yacht harbor. The crowd watched it happen. 50,000 people. Not a sound at first, just this awful quiet, and then the screams. Coast Guard boats were in the water within seconds. It took them more than 4 hours to find him. When they did, he was still in the cockpit, the engine and airframe pinning him to the bottom of the bay. The autopsy found he had not been killed by the impact. He had drowned, strapped into a machine that had failed him 20 fathoms under. He was 28 years old. The investigation afterward was painful to read, even today. The Little Looper had been flown hard that winter. Beachy had done a full outside loop in it earlier, and nobody had ever done an outside loop in a monoplane before. The consensus was that the wing spars had been overstressed, and that in the pullout on March 14th, in a monoplane without the bracing wires of the old biplanes he had grown up in, the spars finally let go. Put simpler, the airplane was ahead of its time. The structure had not caught up to the maneuvers. Now here's the part of this story I want you to sit with for a minute. Almost no one today remembers Lincoln Beachy. Walk into any pilot lounge in America. Walk into a flight school. Ask the kid behind the counter who Beachy was. You will get a blank stare. The most photographed man in America, 111 years ago, completely gone from our memory. But every one of us, if we have ever pulled up into a loop, or rolled an airplane, or even just watched an airshow act and marveled, we are standing on his shoulders. He invented the vocabulary, the vertical dive, the inverted pass, the tail slide, the 8-point roll, more or less. He did not have instructors. He did not have simulators. He did not have a chase plane or a waiver from the Federal Aviation Administration, because there was no FAA, there was no anything, there was just a little man in a little airplane, figuring it out at 3,000 feet, over a crowd of people who had never seen an airplane before. Every Red Bull Air Race pilot, every Sean Tucker routine, every Thunderbird Diamond pass over a county fair, every kid who goes to Oshkosh and gets their brains knocked out by a P-51 Mustang flyby, every one of those moments traces back through a line of airshow pilots, all the way back to this 28-year-old kid over San Francisco Bay on a Sunday afternoon in March. Back when Avgas was cheap and airspace was free and the whole sky was a blank page waiting for somebody brave enough to write on it. Lincoln Beachy was writing. The San Francisco Chronicle ran an editorial the day after he died. The line I remember from it goes roughly like this. He flew as the birds fly, only better, and the birds will mourn him. That's a pretty good send-off for an airshow pilot. The city of San Francisco, a few years back, put a plaque near the marina. It is small. Most people walking along the waterfront never notice it. But if you're ever out there by the Palace of Fine Arts, look for it. Give it a nod, tell him thanks for the loops. For today's stories, I leaned on Frank Marrero's fine biography, Lincoln Beachy, The Man Who Owned the Sky, which is where a lot of the living detail in this segment comes from, along with contemporary reporting from the San Francisco Chronicle and the Examiner Archives. Good stuff. Go read it if you can find a copy. You can find this segment and every other one we've put together over at RadioHangar.com 24 hours a day. We keep the lights on in the hangar all night. I'm Tail Dragger. Thanks for sitting with me. Keep the blue side up and go look up your heroes. Some of them are waiting to be remembered.